The D2C Growth Show.
Hi, welcome to the D2C Growth Show by Hashtag Paid. Every episode, we talk to founders and leaders at some of the most exciting direct-to-consumer brands on the planet. And today, we're talking to Dave Gearhart, who's the CMO at Privy, the host of the e-commerce marketing show, and the man at the top of my LinkedIn feed every single day. How's it going, Dave?
What's up, Roger? Thanks for having me. Even though I'm in my car right now, I appreciate you having me on.
I'm going to start off on the topic of copywriting because it's something you've been real vocal about. How are you and the team thinking about it?
Well, copywriting is like, to me, it's the most important skill in marketing. You could probably make a case that it's the most important skill in business because if you can write great copy, you can do anything, not just sell, but book guests for your show, get a referral from a friend, cold email of an investor or advisor or mentor, write a killer title that's going to get your post read, you know, write a great email that's going to make you money. And so I think copywriting is the most important skill, but for whatever reason, a lot of marketers today just tend to ignore it because we like to get obsessed with the tools and technology and the spreadsheets and the funnels and Google Analytics that we're not always thinking about copywriting. The other reason I love copywriting is because copywriting is rooted in the principles of like human behavior and social psychology. And so it's all about teaching you about, you know, how to appeal to people's wants and desires and emotions and figure out persuasion and write with empathy. And so I think it's like, it's the perfect training for marketing. And so I think that was like number one when, from a content perspective, is like, if we can get everybody on the team to be able to write great copy, like, we can figure anything else out and be able to tell stories on top of that. So it's been a big focus.
What have been some of the biggest influences for you when you think of marketing and thinking about it from the psychological perspective, people, books?
So my last boss is a guy named David Cancel. He's the CEO of a company called Drift. And he was a huge influence in getting me into some of these classic books. But for me, Ogilvy on Advertising was probably number one book that got me really interested in it because I was reading a book that was written, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and the principles of that book are still more relevant than ever today. And what's really interesting, I think if you're like a D2C brand, just go copy Ogilvy ads from the 60s and 70s, and like you would probably be doing a great job with advertising today because I think we overthink it a lot. And some of the, you know, swipe the examples that have already worked. So Ogilvy was one. Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins, which was actually written in 1924, so even older. That one blew my mind because this book is almost 100. It's 100 years old, and the principles still apply today. Then from there, I read Influence by Robert Cialdini, which is not a copywriting book. It's a book about psychology, but Cialdini has these six principles of influence, he calls them. And this book was written in 1985, I think. And these are basically like all the things that subconsciously guide our behavior. And then you can understand how to use them in your marketing. Things like social proof, right? Like, why do we like to see, you know, you go on Yelp, you want to go to a restaurant, you're going to go to the restaurant that has, you know, 4.5 star reviews and 500 ratings, right? You're going to go buy a hoodie, you're going to buy the hoodie that has all the ratings. There's everything is baked. Every lesson in marketing, you can actually go back and apply to Cialdini's principles. So those are three. I could talk about books forever with you in marketing, but I'm trying to think. One other that everybody has to read that a lot of people don't read is a book called Cashvertising. And the reason they don't read it is because the cover looks like a piece of trash and it looks like a joke and it's very clickbaity. But he basically read all the copywriting books and then like put all the lessons into one 200-page book for you, so you could just go read that book.
You've said it quite a bit in interviews and posts. People buy with emotion and then justify it with logic. Do you feel like marketers today appeal too much to logic and measurement and not enough on the things that drive emotion?
I mean, that's a good example of a lesson that I got from one of those copywriting books, right? Where we like to think that people are these and that's why if you're in marketing, studying human behavior and social psychology is so important because we like to think on paper that we are these rational, super analytical people. But like we all have these, you know, there's a great book called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, which is all about this. And we basically all have two systems, right? One is that automated response. That's your lizard brain. That's your reptile brain. And then the other one is like the real human brain. As a marketer, you have to learn how to appeal to the reptilian brain, the one that thinks they're thinking, but is really just making snap judgments. And so like, I think if you can understand those things, then you can easily go and figure out all the tools and technology behind them.
If you had to offer advice to a marketer right now, of the first things they're going to go do, you know, focus on brand, focus on measurement, how are you advising them to kick off the function? What should they focus on?
I think number one thing is get the funnel. You have to get the funnel set up, right? And I think before you think about content, before you think about brand, and I think I've changed my opinion on this. I think a couple of years ago, I'd be like, brand matters first. Brand does matter. But until you have the funnel for your business set up, nothing is going to matter. So very first thing has to be like, you know, how are people, what is our website? How are people going to sign up? What happens after they sign up? Like, can we track that? Can we measure sales? Because there's a whole different strategy for like, if you're trying to get your first sale or your second sale or your fifth sale, like you're just going to have to, those sales come from hustle, just like literally cold emailing people one off, right? But once you get to a certain scale and things start happening a little bit, then I think the shift has to be in the early days brand, because today anything in any industry is a commodity. Like there's just so much access to information and technology and products today in 2020 that no matter what industry you're in, people are going to think that your product is a commodity, even if it's not. And so like the way that you can combat that is by building a brand. A brand is what gets people to know, like, and trust you. And in a world where everything is a commodity, you're going to buy from the brands that you know, like, and trust. And I think that is the huge opportunity that you have in the early days. But a brand doesn't mean, okay, Dave, that means I'm going to go spend six figures and build out and hire a creative agency. No, a brand is how people feel about you. It doesn't mean you need these crazy, like crazy sexy website and go spend $100,000 on an explainer video for your homepage. A brand is how you feel about you. And so how people feel about you. And so if you're a great copywriter and you're building up an email list through great copywriting, you have a brand. People are starting to feel you. And so I think you have to have, more importantly, you have to have a point of view, right? You have to have a point of view. Who is your company? Why are you different? If you're not different, why should somebody choose from you, right? Like you have to have a point of view on the world that's going to differentiate yourself. And you have to think about what's your position in the market. Are you first in the category? If you're first in the category, then great. Your whole strategy should be to go own that category. If you're not first in the category, then you have to be thinking about like, how can I either go reposition the leader in this category or find like a niche of this main category that I can go be first in?
In areas where there's multiple competitors, you've said that investing in brand is important, and we just talked about it, but there's something else that you advise brands to do, and that's poke holes at the competition. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So like you don't necessarily have to talk bad about somebody and throw rocks at them, but if you and I are in the same industry, but you're the bigger competitor, like the thing that I'm going to do is try to find your weaknesses and show where we're better, right? Hey, like, you know, you're using this Squadcast thing to record this podcast right now, right? Let's say that I'm using Zoom. I gotta tell you that, like, you know, my whole play would be like, well, hey, Squadcast is great, but I'm using Zoom. Zoom, the 200 million people in the world are using Zoom right now. They must really know what they're doing. That product's probably a little bit more legit. Don't you think so? Right? Like that's a way that I can poke holes in the competition to try to get you to think differently. And so I think it just starts with doing like a basic analysis of who are the competitors and other companies in your space. And before you think about marketing, you're going to lay them out together and say, okay, what are the opportunities here? This company's really good at that. This company's really good at that. We're better at that. Okay, maybe that's the thing that you need to exploit and talk about from a marketing perspective. And that could be, hey, we're two, like, I'll use two software products, for example, right? Two very, very similar software products, but one of them doesn't have an integration with that key thing that I know you're using every day, right? That's the message that you're going to try to lead with first. Like, we're just like everybody else. Like, this is your opportunity to try to gracefully poke holes in the competition. The other strategy is like you could also just go like the fear, uncertainty, doubt route and completely try to trash a competitor. But I don't think that that's the right play given like how people want to feel about brands today.
Let's say your budget got wiped out, cut, revenue is decreasing. What would you focus on as a marketer?
I would probably create like a podcast. I would probably definitely create a podcast or a vlog and publish just like micro content every single day as me, as the marketing person trying to navigate that thing. Cause I think that's the realest conversation you can have. that's someone that's going to get people to know me and like me and trust me. Like if everything at Privy went to zero and it was just me and I had to build up the company, I would that day start a vlog that's like, wow, it's me now. We have nothing. I'm going to tell you my story and just and go and use that as a way to build brand. And through that channel, you also end up getting a ton of other content because you're filming everything and recording everything up front. But from there, it would be like start to build an email list. So now I'm publishing content daily, but you got to own your audience. And I think, you know, depending on what type of business you're in right now, with how things are in advertising, like you might be learning that lesson again, that the most important thing you can have as a business is really to own your audience. Like even if you have a podcast, that's great, but you don't own that audience. Like Apple Podcasts owns that audience. You have your RSS feed, but you don't own your audience. So like you got to be building an email list. So I would go back to content and back to email, because even if everything dries up and people aren't buying from you, people always want education and entertainment. And I think you can always find a way to provide that and use that as like your Trojan horse, as a way to like build up relationships with people, get them to know you, like you, and trust you. And then you can ask for the sale like when you can down the road, and they're going to already know you and be like, yeah, I've seen that shiny bald man on LinkedIn every day. Like I do trust him. Like, okay, cool. Yeah, maybe I'll sign up for his thing.
You said there's a lot of good things happening on Instagram with artists and musicians, and a lot of brands should be paying attention to that. What is it about that channel and artists and musicians specifically that marketers should pay attention to and replicate?
I think what they should try to replicate is the fact that those people are not marketers. And I think that a lot of times we just default to the playbook in marketing, like what is everybody else doing? What is the marketing playbook? Where oftentimes like the best marketing is done by people who like aren't actually marketers. They're artists like trying to do something ridiculous on Instagram Live, right? And they're just thinking about what's entertaining, right? It goes back to what I just said before. They're just trying to be entertaining. And I think a lot of times we're in the marketing mode and it's like, all right, everyone's online right now. And so we want to create some type of content that we can give to people. Okay. So we're going to start like a webinar series and maybe that's not that interesting, where like, if you're an artist, you're just trying to be you and be entertaining and promote your craft to everybody else. And so I use that as an example because that's what you should study. Don't study what other brands are doing. Study what like the most popular entertainers are doing. And those are the understand, focus on like who has the attention of people, and then think about what are they doing to do that and how can you apply that to your brand? Not necessarily what is every other brand in my space doing.
Empathy is something marketers bring up all the time. A lot of people use the word, but I wonder if we've forgotten what it actually means. I'd love for you to unpack that word. What does it mean? What does it look like to you today?
I mean, I get that it's important now, but it's always been important, right? And I'm realizing, like, I think I shared something that was like, empathy is the most important skill now. It's always been that way, because empathy is what puts you in the shoes of the person that you're trying to sell to. And so what that means, if I'm trying to sell to Roger, I'm not just going to, oh, I love this email that I'm going to send him. I'm going to try to get him to buy this thing right now. No. Empathy is like, what's Roger? He's a dad. He's a podcast host. He's busy. He lives here. He probably has 40 other emails he just got from other people just like me in his inbox right now. So what am I going to do to get him to open it that's going to be different? And how am I going to talk to him that's going to be different? That's empathy, right? Like, it's really understanding what's happening. And I think a lot of people don't do marketing with empathy because they don't put themselves in the shoes of the customer and think about the hundreds of other brands that are trying to sell to the same person right now. And they just get lost in the noise of that, where the opportunity is to acknowledge that and stand out and be different. That's normally how it is in marketing. But today, because of what's happening in the world, empathy is all of that, plus the fact that understanding that people might not be healthy right now. They might have loved ones that are not healthy. They might be scared. They might be, you know, depressed. They might be inside. They might be tired. You know, like all these other emotions and things that are happening right now that put buying your product secondary. You have to be able to acknowledge those.
You spoke earlier about preparing your funnel, things you do sort of at the start. At some point, you begin developing your brand narrative, your story. How do you develop a good story that's empathetic, that resonates with customers? How do you do that?
I think a story is the most important part, because a story is actually going to create a connection, right? Where if you just have messaging and you just stick it out in the market, there's no stories are what have been the thread for people for, you know, who knows how long. The way that I like to think about a story is like, I stole this from a guy named Andy Raskin, who's amazing at positioning and storytelling. But basically, like, you always want to show that there's some undeniable change that's happening in the world right now. So like, there's a big undeniable change that's happening in the world right now. And what are the stakes? Like, what's at stake because of this undeniable change? And usually, like, it's that there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. And ultimately, you want to tell that story so it leads to your product, right? So I'll give you like the privy pitch using that framework, for example, right? The undeniable change in the world right now is that like there's more e-commerce brands than ever. It's easier than ever to build a store on Shopify. However, because everybody's on Shopify and there's so much competition, like, it's harder than ever to grow a business. And that's why you need to figure out marketing. And that's where Privy comes in. Privy helps you understand, right? Like, you have to help get somebody there by telling them a story versus just coming in and dropping some like product marketing facts on people. And go back to entertainment, right? Like, every, you know, there's something authentic about telling a story to hook readers and entertain them. And so, like, we always try to think about what's the framework of the story under the undeniable change framework. But also, like, even just simple before and after, right? What's possible? What's somebody doing? What's the before state of using your product, and what's the after state?
I'd like to get your perspective on one more thing, and that's and it's a bit polarizing, and that's on giveaways and contests. A lot of people will argue that they bring in the wrong crowd; they sort of dilute your brand. Should marketers avoid them? Is there a place for them? I'd love to get your thoughts.
Well, it depends on what the goal is, right? Like, and when you say wrong crowd, like, what would that mean? Because you could use a giveaway to bring in an audience of, maybe a giveaway isn't the best way to incentivize people to, you know, talk to a salesperson or do something that they might not want to do and manufacture a reason to buy, because that person might ultimately cancel or just not be a very profitable customer in the long run because they bought because of that offer. However, if you're going to do it to generate interest from the right audience, like, you're going to run a giveaway because you know that, like, I'm going to do a book giveaway because I know that the people that are going to be interested in a book giveaway are going to be readers, and that's an audience that I'll be able to like launch something to in the future. Then I think it's a great way to build an audience. It just depends on what the goal is. I think giveaways and review campaigns can work really well, just depending on what you're trying to do. I would definitely test.
I came across the story of when you launched Tech in Boston. I think it was your first podcast. You went out looking for sponsorships and you had no idea what you were looking for, how to do it, no benchmarks. But it's such a great example of learning on the go. And I'd love to hear more about that experience.
So basically what happened was I launched this podcast, and it was the first thing that I really did on my own on the side. And it kind of grew, and I had like 3 to 5,000 people that were listening every month. I had a nice size email list, and I was like, wow, I wonder if this could be like a revenue channel for me. I've always wanted to have some type of like side income stream. Like, wouldn't that be nice? And so maybe this is an opportunity to do that. So I just, I sent out an email, and I had an email newsletter that would go out every week. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to see what happens if people respond to this. And this is actually an important marketing lesson that I learned from that. I'm now realizing this for the first time. So I sent out that email and I said, hey, I'm thinking about opening up Tech in Boston for one or two sponsors. I'm not sure yet, but let me know. And I just said, you know what, if people respond back and they're interested, then shoot, I got my first leads to do this. And if nobody responds, then I don't look like an idiot and I have nothing to lose. And so sure enough, I sent out the email and I had 5 people respond and say like, hey, we might be interested in sponsoring. And I was like, whoa, okay, cool. And so then I came up with a little prospectus. I was like, well, what would I even charge somebody for this? Like, how would this even work? And came up with, like, you know, I looked around and saw how other people did it. So you got to go find role models and patterns that you can steal from other people. Like, okay, who has a great podcast? How do they do this? And so I made up a little prospectus. Then I reached out to all those 5 companies and I said, okay, cool. Let's get on a call. Great. Here are the terms of the sponsorship. Let me know. And so I had to sell that. But I think the lesson that I learned was, it's okay to pre-announce something. I almost did that was like crowdfunding, Kickstarter, right? Like I announced it before it even existed. And if enough people were interested in it, then I was going to go do it. Where I think a lot of times we like to wait until things are perfect or until we have this perfect idea or like it's perfectly laid out to go out and do it. And that to me was like, I want to sell sponsorships. So I'm just going to tell people that's what I want to do. And like, I've done this a lot now. Like I'll post something on LinkedIn that's like, hey, I'm thinking about starting this group for blah. Like I did it the other day. Hey, I'm thinking about adding a book club to my A-list group on Patreon. Would that be interesting to people? And a ton of people commented on it. And I was like, cool. Now I know that I should go do that. And I already have demand built in for it. It's basically like a way to like back up any idea that you want to go out and launch.
What's a direct-to-consumer brand that you're pretty excited about right now?
I use Athletic Greens. Like I do, I take an Athletic Greens supplement every day. I'm not excited about that. Like it's just a necessity for me. I'm a customer of Dollar Shave Club. I try not to shave that often, and I just buzz my head. So, I don't know.
Any final words to encourage marketers?
Final words to encourage marketers. Stop thinking about that thing that you were going to go do and just go do it. Test it. Send out an email to your list and say, I'm thinking about launching a podcast. Would you like, instead of saying, I'm going to launch a podcast and take 8 weeks to do it, email your list tonight and say, I'm thinking about launching a podcast. Would you be interested? Because when 75 people email you back, you're going to feel this excitement of like, whoa, my audience wants this. I'm going to go do it. And you're going to be more motivated to do it. If people don't email me back, then maybe it's not the right thing to do it. So like have a bias for action and don't be afraid to go out and test ideas with your audience. Like so many people that I talk to in marketing, like, hey, Dave, you know, I've been wanting to launch my email list for 6 months now, but like, I can't, there's always an excuse. Like it's such an, you have to create momentum for yourself. Right. And one of the things that we'd like as people, this is from influence, is commitment and consistency. Right. And so what that means is once I have told you I'm going to do something, I'm going to go do it. And so there's like an example of like a weight loss study on Facebook, and that people who posted that they were going to start a weight loss challenge were more likely to actually go finish it because now they've made that statement to the world that, hey, I am a person who's doing this weight loss challenge. So when you see me in 2 months, I better look like I've lost weight, right? And so I think like the same is true in marketing, where like commitment and consistency. If I tell you, hey, I'm thinking about launching a podcast, I've now put that out to the world, I'm going to feel some type of like response when people get back to me. I'm going to see all those responses and want to go out and do it.
I love that. If you haven't already, go to privy.com to learn more about Privy. Go to privy.com/e-commerce-marketing-show to hear Dave and his CEO, Ben, talk about marketing and e-commerce. You can learn directly from Dave on Twitter at Dave Gearhart and join his private Patreon community at patreon.com/Dave Gearhart. Dave, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Roger. Appreciate it. I'm gonna head out of my car now, if that's okay.
That's okay, yeah. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. This is the D2C Growth Show by Hashtag Paid.